زیادہ کا دوسرا پہلو ٹریجڈی ہے کربلا کی، بہت بڑی ٹریجڈی ہے. لیکن یہ ٹریجڈی کس لیے ہے میں توجہ دلاؤں گا، ایک اور بات کی طرف ہوگی، کہ امام حسین علیہ السلام کی چھوٹی بیٹی سکینہ بنت الحسین، آپ دیکھیں کہ وہ بچی جس کی عمر بہت چھوٹی ہے اتنا بڑا کام کر گئی کہ خدا کی قسم سکینہ کا ثانی تاریخ نہیں لا سکتی. وہ بچی جس نے مدینہ سے کربلا اور کربلا سے کوفہ اور کوفہ سے شام تک مصیبتیں سہی، کس کے لیے؟ فار دا سیک آف گاڈ، فار دا سیک آف ریلیجن، فار دا سیک آف لا الہ الا اللہ. سکینہ بنت الحسین کی زندگی، یہ جو زندگی ہے، تاریخ کہتی ہے کہ اتنی مصیبتیں اٹھانے کے بعد بھی حسین کی اس بیٹی نے ایک ذرہ برابر شکوا نہیں کیا، گلہ نہیں کیا. میں تو بچی ہوں، میرا سن تو دیکھو، میری مصیبتیں تو دیکھے. کہہ سکتی تھی امام زین العابدین جیسے بھائی سے کہ بھیا میری زندگی دیکھو، مجھے اس سفر کی بجائے مجھے جد کے حرم کی طرف لے جا سکتے ہو، لے جاؤ. نہیں، صبر سکینہ میسج ہے. کس لیے؟ یہ میسج ہے کہ راہ دین میں اگر مشکلات پڑیں، تماچے کھانے پڑیں، تو اپنے آپ کو آمادہ رکھو. زندگی کی ان مشکلات کے لیے اپنے آپ کو آمادہ کرو جس کے نتیجے میں شمع دین روشن رہے. بہرحال میں مختصر کرتا ہوں، ضرورت اس امر کی ہے کہ اس مرحلے میں انشاءاللہ مجلس علماء نے جو سوچا ہے وہ یہی ہے، انشاءاللہ مل کر ایک قوم بنے. آغاز سفر ہے، لیکن میں پورے یقین کے ساتھ امید رکھتا ہوں ابھی تک کی گزشتہ چند دنوں، چند ہفتوں، چند مہینوں کی کارکردگی کے نتیجے میں الحمدللہ یہ قوم خوش، یہ قوم کہ ہم شکر گزار ہیں کہ ہم جہاں بھی گئے ہیں ابھی آمادگی ہے، لوگ آمادہ ہیں، سینٹرز نے آمادگی کا اظہار کیا ہے، ملت نے آمادگی کا اظہار کیا ہے. انشاءاللہ آپ کی لیڈرشپ بھی تیار ہے، آپ بھی تیار ہیں، لیکن اس شعور کے ساتھ، اس آگاہی کے ساتھ کہ اب اکائیوں میں نہیں رہیں گے، اب ملت بن کے رہیں گے. اکائیوں سے نکل کر اب ضرورت ہے کہ بحثیت ملت اس سوسائٹی میں رہتے ہوئے اپنے رول کو ڈیفائن کریں اور اس رول کے اوپر عمل کریں. Whether this role is related to the politics, whether it's related to the education اور دوسرے social aspects جتنے بھی ہیں، ضرورت ہے کہ ایک ملت کے طور پہ انشاءاللہ ہم آگے بڑھیں. خدا ہم سب کا حامی و ناصر ہو، اور میں دعا گو ہوں. والسلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ.
One of the problems that we have with our centers is that they're not all registered as places of worship. This is a travesty. And it means there are people paying taxes and there are centers being unrecognized. Along with that, we have the problem of calling ulama-e-deen from Pakistan or India. As you know, the Home Office has a scheme where each center is licensed by the Home Office to be able to invite and sponsor a scholar or a speaker from a different country. To address this and to make things easier for people to understand how it's done, how it's achieved for your particular center, we have today with us Sayyida Andaleeb Zahra, who will speak on this issue and hopefully shed some light for you and for me. Sister Zahra.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to everyone. I've been asked today to give a presentation, a quick guide or summary on immigration rules and how they affect institutions like these. Now, I've been asked to do something on sponsorship licenses. Each institution, if they require migrants from other countries other than the EE national states, the UK government has certain rules and regulations whereby they need a sponsorship license. And I will go through each step that a institution will need to follow in order to obtain a sponsorship license. Now, in a nutshell, how to obtain a license. Each institution needs to ensure that they have best practices. Now, best practices means HR policies, and unfortunately, most institutions that traditionally have been known don't have any policies or practices within their religious meetings. What we need is Data Protection Act requires that every institution keeps a record of their members, their employees, potential members as well. And as a institution that wants to obtain a sponsorship license, you have to adhere to these rules as well. Now, secondly, you also have to take responsibility for immigration rules and regulations. So, for example, if an employee within the institution has not turned up for work without reason, this unfortunately does have to be highlighted to the UKBA. Other responsibilities are obviously having illegal migrants within your institutions. Unfortunately, we cannot have that. Now, sorry, I sidetracked there. I'll go back. Now, how to obtain a license? What you will be doing is a straightforward online application. To obtain the online application, you have an ID number and a username on the UKBA website. Once the director or the secretary or whoever you've nominated goes online to the UKBA website, logs in and signs in, you have to attach all these policies that you should have obtained. So your records of employees, your accountant's records, your previous tax returns, details of which religious faith you are following, and the aims and objectives. Obviously, as we've been hearing today, that there's various a various structure through it all, and that's how it needs to be in each institution, not just as an area on its own. Once you're online and the requisite documents have been attached on the UKBA website, a fee needs to be paid for the particular type of application you're making. Now, there's permanent employees that you can call from non-EEA states, or there's temporary workers, and they fall into two categories. The first category is called a tier. So a tier 5 is your temporary workers, and under tier 2 is your permanent workers. Normally, they are given 3 years from the date that they are granted entry clearance into this country, whereby they can preach or whatever role you've assigned to them. Now, unfortunately, it's a paper exercise, so when you're standing up and explaining, it can seem quite dull, but it's online and it's straightforward, step by step, you go through. Now, once the fee of £515 has been paid, which is for each tier, so tier 2 and tier 5, you pay £515. So once that has been paid, what the UKBA do, they give you they start assessing the application. Once they've assessed, they'll give you a score of either a grade A or a grade B. Now, each institution needs to attain a grade A in order to sponsor people from non-EEA nationals. If for any reason you are granted a grade B, this might mean because you've not given your accounting records, you don't have correct policies, so you need to make policies, or that you've not provided any other paper information, so you need to provide that to them. You've got 3 months from the date to rectify this. Once it's rectified, you'll be able to assign sponsorship license to your potential migrant employee. Now, the step-by-step guide to this is basically you obtain a license through the online application system. Once you've received a license, you will be able to, as you say, nominate it to your potential migrant abroad. It's like a unique ID, a unique number that you give to the potential migrant. Once that's given, the migrant abroad will be able to apply for entry clearance. Now, the entry clearance process is separate to obtaining a license. It's three different steps. So this is for the institutions only. My view is, once you have the privilege of having a sponsorship license, it is the responsibility of the institution to have stringent policies in place, stringent procedures in place. Both it assists the migrant, but it also assists the institutions. We as a community need to start progressing, start becoming professional in our way, how we employ people, and the caliber of people that we employ as well. So something simple, like, for example, payments to the employees cannot be made via cash. It has to go through bank accounts. Something as simple as that needs to be addressed with our institution. So when we are having temporary workers, there needs to be a record of exactly what's going on in each institution. Now, if you require any further information, you can contact some organisers, and we'll get in touch with me, and I'll be able to offer you further advice on immigration. But this is just a snippet of how you can obtain a licence to employ migrants from abroad. I'd like to thank the organisers for giving me the opportunity to provide you with this information. But should you need any other areas of law as well, you're more than welcome. I'll try to assist you. Thank you very much.
I would like to invite Brother Ehsan, who is the Central Coordinator for Shia Council, to say a few words.
Brothers and sisters, Assalamu Alaikum. I have been honored with this title of Imamia Council UK Coordinator by Majlis Ulama Sayyid Ali Raza Sahab, and I would like your help to reach where we are. Few words from me. Basically, the main vision which I have kept for this year is a very simple one, and it's called communication. The observation I have is we have roughly about 70 Imam Bargas and organizations around the place. And a lot of us know each other on a personal level. But at the organization level, we have done very little. And alhamdulillah, under Majlis Ulama umbrella, I think last year or 2 or 3 years, we are reaching a place where we're starting getting into a kind of a community, a voice, and we still have a long way to go. And within communication, I mean not only within communication, but also in a wider community. I think it's very essential that we have communication within, where we know each other and we can help each other. And once we develop that kind of a habit, I think we'll automatically go into an economic kind of help. Very simple example. If you know who are the tradesmen in your community, and put a list somewhere in each community hall, we can very easily say, okay, I need to get some plumbing work done. Why don't I call my own person? And at the same time, I would, and everyone would expect, that tradesman or person will deliver you an excellent quality work and not do shortcuts, which we do face sometimes. Similarly, if there's a professional, we always use lawyers, we always use a lot of other people. If we have a list in each Imam Barga, as a community, we will be able to help each other out. There's nothing wrong in using your own community, and obviously there's a return for it. We would expect that person or professional gives you quality work. So we are helping each other out and without any ihsan of anyone else. Because if we don't have that, we'll go out and get that work done from somewhere else. So I think it's very important we communicate within ourselves. When I say wider community, what I mean by that is, Alhamdulillah, Azadari is our livelihood. Livelihood, we live for Imam Hussein, everything. But we need to get a little bit open up and tell people who live around us who we are and what we are. And how can we do this? My recommendation is each Imam Barga have an open day or open morning, open up your doors. Let your neighbors come and have a coffee, tea with you on a monthly basis.